Very, Very Far North by Dan Barr-L. Chapter 2, read by Mrs. Lowe. Chapter 2. Dwayne makes his home homier and gets to know his neighbor. In the weeks that followed Dwayne's arrival to the Very, Very Far North, he set for himself the goal of making his new cave as cozy as it could be. It was the mattress left behind by whomever had lived there earlier that had inspired him. Such softness was a new and wonderful experience for Dwayne. He could hardly believe that a nap could be made even more pleasant than it already was, but the mattress definitely proved so, and it led him to consider what other items might bring unexpected delight into his life. Cece suggested that the mattress was most likely brought over from the shipwreck, as Dwayne now called the place where she lived. She said, "As long as you would be kind enough not to remove the books and scientific objects from my room, I don't see any reason why you can't borrow anything else on board." So, Dwayne rummaged from room to room, putting together items he would like to bring back to his cave. A table, some chairs, a set of drawers to keep any interesting things he might find on an adventure. These were the first pieces Dwayne chose to take. Also at Cece's suggestion, Dwayne used a small boat that was tied to the shipwreck to carry everything back to shore. He named the small boat the Reckless on account of it not suffering a big hole that would cause it to sink. Back and forth, Dwayne swam from the shipwreck to the beach, pulling the Reckless by a rope that he held between his teeth. It was hard work, both the swimming and later the carrying, because then he had to bring the objects from the beach up to his much higher cave. Harder still were the unexpected interruptions whenever he passed the field where his neighbor, the muskox, made his home. The friendship that Dwayne had so hoped would blossom between the two of them had not yet progressed beyond occasional hellos. The muskox was often too preoccupied with, well, himself and his reflection in the large pond. But this day was different. Breaking his gaze, the muskox would ask Dwayne the same question each and every time Dwayne walked by. "And what have you there?" the muskox would say, despite it being fairly obvious what was in Dwayne's arms. On the first trip to his cave, Dwayne was carrying a table. Without putting it down, Dwayne stopped and replied, "It's a table." "Yes, yes, so I see, commented the muskox, returning to his reflection. Assuming the conversation was finished, Dwayne continued up the hill toward his cave when he was addressed by the muskox a second time. "For what will you be using it?" Still holding the table, which was feeling increasingly heavier, Dwayne turned around to respond. "Oh, I don't know. I thought that it would be nice to eat breakfast at, or to keep a vase of wildflowers on to cheer the cave up." "Yes, yes, that would be proper," agreed the muskox. Dwayne watched him return his attention once more to the pond before twisting his heavy load back in the direction of the cave. He could feel his front paws weakening with the effort of holding the table while he climbed. "Do you have a vase?" Dwayne stopped momentarily and let out a brief whimper. Taking a deep breath, he gathered his waning strength in order to turn and politely face his neighbor. Dwayne then bent backward so that some of the table's weight rested on his belly, which was uncomfortable, but did help prevent gravity from taking both him and the table forward and back down the hill at a speed faster than deemed safe. "Do I have a what?" he struggled to ask. None of Dwayne's efforts of endurance seemed to interest the muskox in the least. "I was simply inquiring whether you were in possession of a vase for the wildflowers of which you spoke. My great-aunt once had a spectacular vase. I shall never forget it. Painted in the lightest of blues, with twisting vine-like handles, one could only admire its daintiness. But heavy? My goodness, you could not imagine an object as heavy as that vase." In fact, Dwayne could well imagine an object so heavy, because he was currently buckling under the weight of the heavy table. Lower and lower his back arched as his poor knees bent, eventually bringing him flat on the ground with the table straddled above him. The muskox gave Dwayne a disapproving look. "You don't intend on leaving the table there, I hope."
"Just for a minute or two," said Dwayne in a faint voice.
On subsequent trips, when he passed by the field and the muskox inquired of what was in his arms, Dwayne would put down the chairs or dresser or box of knick-knacks and not lift them again until he was absolutely sure
that the muskox had asked every possible question and related every memory that came up within the conversation. In that way, Duane managed to complete his journeys without collapsing from sheer exhaustion. Late in the day, Duane returned the Reckless, believing he had completed transforming his cave into a cozy home. He intended on popping in to say goodbye to Cece, who had been very helpful, but instead, on a whim, he had one last rummage, making his way deeper into a large, shadowy room filled from floor to ceiling with this and that. Duane spotted something as tall as he, but thinner, with a very round face and no hands or arms. He rushed to find Cece. "What's that?" Duane asked her once back in the room. "My book tells me that it's a grandfather clock," explained Cece. "I am currently in possession of what is called a pocket watch, which is similar in purpose, but a great deal smaller." "Will it grow up into a grandfather clock?" Duane wondered. "I have asked that very same question. My current hypothesis is that it will. But ultimately, it will be a wait-and-see situation." "You said it had a purpose. What purpose does it have?" "To tell you the time," replied Cece. Duane found that a curious thought. "But isn't the time always now?" The smart and well-read owl hesitated. "Yes, I suppose. But when is now? Is now the morning? Or is it noon? Or is it late at night? Do you see the complications?" Duane did not. "I know it isn't morning because I already ate breakfast. I had berries. They were delicious. I know it isn't noon because I already felt the sun losing interest in the day and heading off to wherever it goes. I put now sometime between late afternoon and evening because if it were night, I probably couldn't see you." The deep-thinking owl stared at the polar bear for a good, long time, unable to come up with a countering argument. So she changed the subject and said, "Time has not been good to this grandfather clock. The hands on its face have fallen off, making it impossible to tell if it's 4:28 or 8:42 or 7:30 or 8:45. Duane understood nothing that Cece had just said, other than that it used to have hands on its face, which, in the way that Duane understood it to mean, was really more of a misunderstanding than an understanding. Hands on its face? He wondered. "This grandfather clock has lost its purpose," Cece continued. Duane found that terribly sad news. He came closer to the grandfather clock with a strong desire to console it. Then he thought he heard something. Duane put his ear up against the side of the clock and listened closely. "It sounds like large water drops falling from a melting icicle and hitting a puddle. Is the poor old thing melting too?" "Your observation skills are admirable, Duane the polar bear, but your conjecturing needs work. It's not melting, it's talking." "Really? Is it talking to me?" he asked, completely misunderstanding again. Duane addressed the object in an apologetic tone. "I'm sorry, I'm afraid I don't speak clock." "No, Duane, I meant it was tick-talking. That's what clocks and watches do." Using her beak, Cece pried open a long thin door in the belly of the clock, thus revealing an intricate display of rusted gears and springs and chains and doodads creaking away. "A clock is a machine." "That tells what time now is," Duane stated with growing confidence. "Yes, when it works correctly, when it has its hands," Cece clarified. "Which this one doesn't," Duane said sympathetically. "No," agreed Cece. "This grandfather clock will tick-tock away, but to no end, to no purpose." The owl and the polar bear stood silently, as if to pay respect to the clock's woeful, abandoned state. It was a solemn, heavy moment, until Duane's expression suddenly brightened with a big smile. "Perfect, I'll take it," he said, lifting the grandfather clock up in a big bear hug. But why?" sputtered Cece. "It won't tell you anything." "No," agreed the polar bear, "but it will suggest possibilities, and that's always exciting." Then Duane, concerned that the time was late because he could see the blackening sky and wanting to avoid climbing up to his cave with the heavy clock in complete darkness, began lugging it to the Reckless. Cece was an owl who preferred sensible answers, and Duane's answer was not nearly close enough to meeting her standard. "What possibilities?" she demanded while in pursuit. "Well, maybe at a certain time in the future, I will come across a delicious chocolate cake." "Yes, perhaps," agreed Cece, "but the grandfather clock can't tell you when that might happen." and it can't tell me when that might not happen either, on account of its having no hands. So it remains a possibility. Dwayne loaded the clock onto the boat and took hold of the rope. Good night, Cece. I'll return the wreck last tomorrow. With a small splash, he was in the water, pulling his clock toward the shore. He left the snowy owl standing on board the shipwreck in a confused state, with eyes slightly wider than they naturally were. It's not a matter of when, it's a matter of if, she finally shouted. Did you hear me? Dwayne! Perhaps he heard her, or perhaps not, but either way, he had the rope between his teeth, so a reply would have been difficult. That night, Dwayne lay upon his so-soft mattress, looking over his table and chairs, his dresser, and his assorted knick-knacks. When he had awoken that morning, he had next to nothing in his cave, but now he had a cozy home. At the other side of his cave stood the grandfather clock, talking away. Dwayne was starting to understand how clocks speak and what they were saying. Clocks were not so much interested in now, but later, in the future. For example, 10 minutes from now, or 20, or 90, a rainfall might begin. Or not. In an hour, Dwayne might hear the muskox snoring from his field below. Or not. The only thing you knew for sure was that something was going to happen, which made things exciting. On that, the grandfather clock and Dwayne agreed. Thank you for listening along with me. I can hardly wait to see what Dwayne finds in Chapter 3.